right. You got the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show coming to you live on AM 660 The Answer. And we will be live on the airwaves right up to 7 o'clock tonight. The Rays played over in Tampa or St. Pete or wherever the Trop is over yonder this afternoon. Unfortunately lost in extra innings on a solo home run, I think in the top of the 12th. That's the bad news for the Rays, and we're sorry about that. But the good news is we'll be live right up to the top of the hour, 7 o'clock. Same thing tomorrow night, because the Rays are not playing tomorrow. They're taking the day off. And who said they have the day off? Anyway, we're not going to take the day off, and we'll be here for sure. All right, I am Christopher Hart, and I'm joined in the studio tonight by David Levitt. And, of course, David Levitt is of Refresh Computers, and he's a candidate for the Florida House. David.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. And we're coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And please don't forget, for the very best in Mercury Free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. Don't forget to ask him about his great book, Mercury Free. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the trade deal. It appears to be a done deal. The Senate is voting on it right now and going to drive it on through. We'll talk about that a little bit because it leads us right into something David wanted to talk about, which I'm going to just simply call corporate cronyism. That a fair, broad, sweeping description?
That's definitely a big, broad sweeping description of what I need to address
today. All right. So we're going to talk about that. If you want to join us, you can call us at 407-774-8255. David won't be here for the whole show, but he'll be here for about three quarters of it. But he does have a meeting he will be attending tonight. And then we're also going to mix in there. You know, I was having a conversation this afternoon with one of our loyal listeners, Rita. Hey, Rita. And she mentioned something that made me think. She said, you know, all this racism business and what about his daughters? And I thought, you know, his daughters, yeah, those daughters, what about those daughters? So we're going to talk about Barack Obama and his daughters, because they are walking, talking proof of how very far we have come as a society in dealing with racism and leaving it behind. All right, so we'll save that for a little bit later on in the show. But once again, you can join us if you like, 407-774-8255. By the way, we're also going to talk about the San Francisco treat. If you are black, you might want to know about the San Francisco treat mint.
Haven't heard of that one.
The San Francisco treat mint. And then if we have time, we'll talk about getting whapped, WAP, the WAP. All right, but in the meantime, the trade deal that I've been so adamantly against here, opposed to on the show, it appears now that it is definitely going to be a done deal. The Republicans have handed the president a huge legislative victory. That's not me saying that. That's the Wall Street Journal front page article today. And certainly this, on the surface of it, does appear to be a huge victory for the president, delivered to him on a silver platter by Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. And, oh, by the way, anybody that opposed them is now a pariah and being treated as a leper in the House and the Senate. Take that, the likes of Dan Webster. Take that, the likes of Ted Cruz, who at the end voted against this thing. It's highly debatable whether these trade deals create jobs here, but certainly it's not debatable that good jobs are lost as a result of them, which is why they have to tag on the adjustment authority, and that is to allow the government to give people who are going to lose good jobs a lot of money because they're going to lose good jobs. And, of course, we, the taxpayers, are going to bear the burden of it, but then again, there'll be less of us because those who had good jobs and lost them now won't be paying taxes. They'll be getting paid out by the taxpayer.
So they admit that they're giving away the jobs.
Yeah.
On the one hand. On the other hand, they want to pass the executive order, I guess that's what
it is. Yeah, well,
right?
It's a fast-track trade authority, mm-hmm. And so in order to create jobs.
To give the money to the people who lost the jobs because they
went somewhere else. Exactly. Right. And certainly there is a balance to be struck. Obviously, we want to trade with other nations, but we don't want to put our sovereignty at risk. And there's two ways these trade deals have been putting our sovereignty at risk. They put us in these agreements where we have to do things that are sort of international protocol, not national law. And then also, because we are weakening our economy, we're becoming more and more dependent on these countries that we trade with. And we could end up at some point, if we continue this trend, like, say, for instance, these countries in Europe who have to kowtow to old Vladi Putin because they are so dependent on him for their energy needs. Right?
That's right.
And so, and then, of course, there's the reason, a big reason why, of course, the Republicans all got in line and along with the establishment is that there are corporate interests who want these deals to go through. Just like, by the way, there are corporate interests, and we'll talk about this during the conversation, that want the Iran nuclear deal to go through. All right? A lot of corporate interests want these things to happen.
It always gets down to the money.
Follow the money is what Larry used to always say.
Always.
Follow the money. So we're going to be following the money tonight. But to get back to the trade deal, what's going to happen is the president is now going to work out a deal with these Pacific Rim countries, and then it's going to be put back to the Congress for what they call an up or down vote. And, of course, at that time, the pressure, the huge pressure, is going to be to pass the deal. And, of course, they won't know what all is in the deal because most of them won't even read the deal because they are just going to be walking in lockstep because they don't want to get their head hacked off by John Boehner or Mitch McConnell like what's going on right now because of people who buck the system here. I got to say, at the end of the day, the two people in the Orlando area, now I'm not including the East Coast, but if you want, we can include Bill Posey in this. But the two politicians who are in national office right now from the Orlando area that I respect the most are Dan Webster and Alan Grayson. And, oh, I'm sorry, Dan, if I put you in the same sentence with Alan. But the reason being is both are unafraid to speak to power.
You may not agree with them,
right.
And I certainly don't agree with Alan Grayson on a lot of things.
Most things not.
But I'm telling you what, he is not afraid to buck the system.
And that's what we need more of and on both sides of the aisle,
mm-hmm.
on both sides of the aisle. This, what we are seeing now, this is traditional politics that's been practiced in Washington since the turn of the last century. All right, where you have a strong party politics. This is what you study when you go to political science in college. It's what you pay your money for. All right, this is what's called strong arm politics or strong party politics, where the party establishment rules the day. And anybody that's going to buck it, you are going to pay, and you're going to pay dearly. And the message is, if you want to get along, you better play along. Otherwise, you're going to get nothing. We're going to ostracize you. We're going to make your life miserable here. And we're going to support your opponent in the next election, even if that opponent's a Democrat or Republican, depending on which side of the aisle you're playing on here. This is the worst kind of politics. And yet we're being told this is great. This is great stuff. Look, John Boehner's now, he's a strong leader. Mitch McConnell, there's an op-ed in today's Wall Street Journal by Bob Dole and Trent Lott, lauding Mitch McConnell. What a wonderful Senator, what a wonderful majority leader in the Senate. Look how much he's getting done. He's gotten so much done. Let me tell you something. That's not the best barometer of good government, how many laws they passed. Did it ever dawn on these fools that the reason our founding fathers made it so difficult to pass laws is because they did not want a lot of them getting passed? That they were smart enough to know that the more laws you passed, the more liberty you gave up and the more of your wealth you gave up? That's the process here? And take a look at this stuff with the business in South Carolina, Charleston, and the rush to do away with the Confederate flags. We gotta sanitize the country of Confederate flags.
Well, Confederate everything.
General
Lee.
Yeah, General Lee, the car, that's right.
You can't even buy one.
I tell you what, if you got one, though, your value just went up.
So I got a question, though. I actually saw this question on Facebook, and I didn't get a chance to read anybody's answer. That, so you know when they have the Civil War reenactments?
Right.
So now is it just going to be one side?
I guess they're going to have to sew their own flags if they want to have one and then risk, you know, offending someone.
I guess.
You know, so this is the, you know, but our founding fathers did not want this type of government. Where you at the moment of passion, at the moment of not reason but emotion, they did not want laws being passed at that time because more often than not, bad laws are passed at that time, and this is why the Democrats are always wanting to jump on to do it because they know that's the best time to get their legislation passed through, which is invariably bad legislation. But when in the heat of the moment, the bad legislation suddenly looks reasonable. The president, all he's calling for is reasonable background checks. Like that have made a dime's worth of difference in Charleston or any of the other places. Wouldn't have made a damn bit of difference. By the way, on the cover of the New York Post today is a hacking incident in New York City. A daytime hacking incident with a big old machete. Tell me if people don't want to hurt people, they won't find a way to do it. And tell me, folks, if you want to listen to the American Adversaries, that you won't find a way to do it. We'll be here right up till 7 o'clock. Please come back and listen to us after the break. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. 007 is in the studio with me here tonight. That'd be David Levitt, man of many faces, Refresh Computers, Refresh Telecom. What's the auction site again?
Technology Surplus Depot.
TechnologySurplusDepot.com. Mm-hmm. Or just go to RefreshComputers.net and find it there. Also, of course, David is running as a Libertarian candidate for the Florida House. District 29, and that's up there in the Lake Mary, Sanford area, right?
Lake Mary, Longwood, West Sanford, like in the Goldsboro area.
Okay.
Iver Springs, Fern Park, that area.
And if you would like to sign a petition to help him get on the ballot, you can find those petitions at your website?
At DaveForHouse.com, D-A-V-E, the number 4, H-O-U-S-E. com.
Okay, that's DaveForHouse.com. Mm-hmm. All right, I also played that for another reason. You know, the bank vault's going to get looted here. If this trade deal, now, once again, this is still after today and Obama gets the authority, then assuming he does work out a deal with these Pacific Rim countries. And by the way, they've been As Paul Ryan, as he was telling us that there is no deal, also at the same time revealed that they have been working on this for about 10 years now, or at least since the Bush administration, that there is probably going to be something fairly soon because most of it has already been worked out. And that's why they're anxious to get this thing done. And so what it amounts to at the end of the day, though, is income redistribution from the United States to other countries around the world.
Now, is it kind of modeled after NAFTA?
Essentially, yes.
What I thought.
Yeah. And the problem I have with it is this president negotiating it. You know, he's given away the store over there in Iran. Right. Yeah. And what's to expect? He won't do the same thing here. And of course, the Democrats are the worst at corporate cronyism, mm-hmm. are they not?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, with NAFTA, that's why I was wondering about the NAFTA deal, because I happen to know that, you know, manufacturers here in the States will buy parts from, you know, China and all over the world.
Right.
And they have them shipped to Mexico. So they can assemble everything there
right.
in the plants in Mexico. That's why you see a lot of things made in China assembled in Mexico.
And then
from there, they have to either ship them directly. I believe they have to come back. The end product has to come back into the States. I believe whatever is sent there
right.
has to come back.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But still, what is being sent there, along with all the parts, are the jobs.
Exactly.
Putting those parts together.
Exactly. And that's why I say this is simply a form of income redistribution, which is why I can see why the president is anxious to get his hands all over this deal. Mm-hmm. But for the Republicans to assist him, you know, it's sort of defies logic. But then again, maybe it doesn't. But it, as I said, it's a done deal now. So we'll see what kind of deal the president does come up with these other countries. We have been assured that there will be labor protections, that there will be environmental protections, whatever that means. But certainly at the end of the day, it's probably going to mean our sovereignty, you know, being whittled away a little bit more.
Well, and it's just a hunch, Chris, but you may want to look at companies like Apple and other companies like that. You said follow the money,
yeah,
and see where this might actually play in. You know, companies,
sure,
like that who have things assembled in other countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, and of course, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, is one of the biggest liberals in town,
mm-hmm,
you know, where whatever town he's in at the particular moment. But this is a general idea of what you wanted to talk about today, isn't it?
Well, kind of, but on a local level,
yeah.
You know, because I've been fighting this corporate cronyism, like you said earlier, for the last several years, and I keep looking and digging, and the more I dig, the more upset I get. The more upset
there
I get,
goes your blood pressure.
The more I want to do about it. And, you know, I used to blame, like, for example, over in Seminole County, where I go to a lot of Board of County Commissioner meetings, I used to like, blame those county commissioners. Those darn county commissioners giving away our taxpayer money again. But then you got to dig a little bit deeper, and you find out that they're not the only county commissioners doing this. It's happening all over the state of Florida.
Sure.
And it's happening in cities and municipalities all over the state as well. And the reason is, if you dig a little deeper, you see there's Florida statutes. And what I've learned was that these counties and cities, the money they spend, there has to be a Florida statute that defines how they spend taxpayer money.
Okay.
Okay. And there are lots of Florida statutes right today,
sure,
that got put in there by Florida legislators that allows these cities and counties to redistribute taxpayer money to these companies for no goods or services in return. And so basically corporate welfare in the form of grants, community,
right,
redevelopment areas, and things like that. So my job when I get to Tallahassee will be to cut out some of these statutes that allow these counties and cities to do it to begin with.
Well, does that mean, are you going to put more trust in the county commissions to do the right thing?
Well, they can only distribute taxpayer money,
yeah,
in the way that the statutes allow them.
I see. So by eliminating statutes, you'll be sort of eliminating that particular, yeah, way of them distributing that money.
You want to save hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars? Eliminate some of those statutes in Florida. And the governor wouldn't have to go around touting that he's eliminated all this, you know. And as a matter of fact, on that aspect, you know that the budget increases every year.
Right.
So you might be touting some tax cuts, but why are we spending so much more money all the time?
Right.
So there's some other issues. And one way that we can cut hundreds of millions of dollars from the Florida budget is just simply stop giving it away to these companies who we're not getting anything back in return for.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's a great plan. Would you get support though from the other legislators? Because this is the meat of it, isn't it? This is where the wheels are greased, so to speak.
Well, it is, and you get support through exposure. Okay. So I, for example, in Seminole County,
yeah,
you know, we found that, you know, this one entity, Bilray Nissan, I'll say it, we've talked about them before.
Yeah, with the penny tax increase, we talked about it.
Well, and, you know, they're getting $1.75 million now of taxpayer money in the special community redevelopment area that they have their business located at. And it's all taxpayer money that's going to them. And if you look at the campaign contributions of four of the five sitting commissioners,
right,
three of them anyway, have the max contributions from four different entities at the same address as Bilray Nissan. So, you know, each entity is allowed to
right,
contribute the max amount.
Right.
And it's all legal.
Sure.
Okay. I'm not saying that they're doing anything wrong. That it's all completely legal, and it's nuts that it's legal.
Well, that's what makes it so crazy.
And so when you expose these things and you let people know about it, I'm hoping that would energize some people to turn around and say, hey, wait a minute. I know they're not doing anything illegal here.
Right.
But that's wrong.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, it'd be wrong to change the channel because we still have an hour and a half to go tonight, folks. Believe it or not, the first half hour is already over. But we will be here. We'll be live on the airwaves right at 7 o'clock. The Rays played this afternoon, unfortunately lost. But there's always the next game, right? And there's always the next segment. We'll continue this conversation when we get back. Please stay with us. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. We're here. We're live. 407-774-8255 is the number. I'm Christopher Hart in studio this afternoon with David Levitt. And, of course, David is an excellent businessman here in Central Florida, creates a lot of jobs, and provides a great product and service for the community here in Central Florida.
Very proud to be a job creator here without any government assistant, I might add.
There you go. There you go. And he doesn't take these perks either to decorate his front lawn, so to speak. And once again, if you'd like to help him, you can help go to daveforhouse.com. That's daveforhouse.com. And you can see his positions on various issues. And if you want to volunteer or donate to his campaign, you can do it right there. And Dave will certainly, if you got a group or something like that, Dave would love to come out and speak before the group, right?
Absolutely will. And actually, right on the website is the phone number you can call. And when you call that number, there's an option to reach me right on my cell phone, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Go figure
so
that.
So if you got something going on and you wanna make some waves, I'll make some waves for you. Give me a call.
Now, you mentioned these particular state statutes that designate how counties and municipalities, local governments, that is, spend their taxpayer dollars. How are you already beginning the process of identifying the ones that you would eliminate?
Oh, yeah. I have a whole list. And if you know what I'll do is I'll work on kind of doing an abbreviated
condensed
version of
Reader's
them.
Reader's Digest
and I'll
version.
Put them out on the website.
Okay.
People can actually take a look at them.
And see what they are.
And see what they are and read them. It's in plain English and you will be shocked as I was when I was reading through some of these, how easy it is to just hand out our taxpayer money, and they make it so easy.
Well, right, and which is why it's going to be hard for you to fight it in Tallahassee, because the establishment lawmakers rely on these handouts
and I'm telling
for their
you, Chris,
donors.
This is why we need a third entity in there.
Well, I agree.
This is why we need to drive a wedge between that gap, because – you know, these lawmakers keep making the same laws. They keep, you know, they're favoring these companies. And you're right. It makes it very difficult when the same lawmakers favoring these companies are the ones getting campaign donations and things like that. It makes it very difficult to drive a wedge in that. But we do it by exposing it.
And,
you know, even though it's not illegal, a lot of these folks would not want to know.
Sure.
Which county commissioner, for example, would not, you know, the
would
commissioner
benefit, you know,
from Bill Ray Nissan? Which one and how much? You know, we're exposing that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's completely legal for them to do that, but we want to make it where it's not legal anymore.
Right.
Because of course, we have to use taxpayer dollars for companies for goods and services. That's fine.
Right.
Because, we as taxpayers need things, we need roads and sidewalks and bridges and stuff like that. But when you're giving a company money for anything other than that, just think about that. It does not develop economically at all.
No.
They use that excuse, XYZ company needs these tax breaks and this much money because the economic impact it's going to have in the region by giving them that money. That is false. That is baloney.
And you said the light of day, shining the light of day on these things, will bring about their demise.
Mm-hmm.
There is truth in your words. If we just look at what happened in the most recent legislative session with the money that was supposed to go to the sports teams.
That's right.
right? This would have been one of those little laws that you were talking about, right?
It would have been a way.
Because it would have affected the soccer stadium here that the guys finally, you know, wised up and said, we'll do it on our own.
That's right.
You know,
and kudos to them, by the way.
I was going to say, you ought to shame us here. Here's
That's
a couple
right.
of guys, you know, from socialist countries with a socialist sport and come in here and act like capitalists.
That's right. And they say, I got you guys. You know what?
Yeah.
We're going to pay for our own stadium.
Yeah. But this is the type of thing David is talking about. Only that we knew about, and a lot of people didn't like it when we knew about it. But all of this other stuff goes on that we don't know about, and that's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about. It's the stuff that we don't know about that's going on every day.
Right.
Well, I mean, we know about it from a general perspective.
Well,
but
it goes on, but we don't know the specifics, where, what, why, who, and how. And that's what you're digging
and
out.
And that's what I'm digging out, and that's what I'm going to expose, if you will.
Right. And this is it goes on in the local state level, but it also goes on the federal level too.
It does. But you know what? It's very, if you think it's hard dealing with this stuff in a county, imagine, you know, for the country,
right?
You know how difficult this is, and it's going on,
and that's what we see playing out with this trade deal in Washington D.C. Exactly, because this trade deal is going to have perks. It is going to be basically picking winners and losers. Mm-hmm. It is going to favor big business over small business. That's what they do. That's what these trade deals are for.
You get one. Okay, and I'll go back to the county again because that's what I'm familiar with. You get $1.75 million to Bill Ray Nissan.
Yeah.
Okay, so how about the other car dealerships? I'm sure they probably got a piece of something somewhere.
Right.
But I'm just saying, you know, you can't, they can because they do it, but they shouldn't be able to do that, give any company's money. I was going to say give one company money without giving the other one, but you can't give any of it out unless you're getting something back in return.
That should be the measure. That should be the litmus test. It should be a cost-benefit analysis done, right? And the benefits should be tangible. They should be, you know, visible, so to speak.
Well, I mean, it should be for a good or a service.
That's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And because you can say, and they use this excuse all the time that, you know, they give a company, you know, $100 million tax break in a particular area because they're going to bring all these jobs. But you know what? If you're a company, just think about it. Now, if you own a company and you need to hire 100 people, well, you're going to hire 100 people. You don't need somebody to give you money. But you know what? That same company, now they're conditioned. They're conditioned to hold out their hand.
Well, and they know that that's how the game is played.
Exactly.
They know that they play this parlor game, if you will, of playing local governments one off another. Mm-hmm. The sports franchises are famous for this.
Absolutely.
And it started when Walter O'Malley left Brooklyn for Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a quirk because he wanted to, with his own money, expand his baseball stadium in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But the local politicians wouldn't let him do it with his own money.
Right.
And they wanted, you know, some kickback of their own, and he wouldn't do that. So Los Angeles caught wind of it, and they said, well, come on out here. And then the bidding process started. They said, we'll give you some real estate downtown. We'll help you build a stadium, then we'll give you the stadium, and on top of that, we'll give you some real estate around the stadium. And so, obviously, he wasn't an idiot, but the problem was that began the trend, at least in sports franchises, for the franchise to basically strong-arm cities, like the Orlando Magic. We got to have us a new arena down here, and we're only going to pay about 10%. And by the way, the money that the DeVos family and the Magic actually spent on that arena, you know where it went? Didn't you tell me one time? It went to pay for the Magic's locker rooms.
Oh, that's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
They have this, like, fine, you know, rare wood nice chairs, and it's just sweet. I mean, you could sleep on the floor in there and not hurt your back. I mean, the rest of it, folks, we paid for.
Yeah.
And because the Magic had to have it to keep that lousy basketball team that can't get out of its own way. I hope Scott Skiles, I love the guy, I hope he can turn that team around. But they are just, it wasn't worth it. The old arena, by the way, when it comes to concerts, was a hell of a lot better than that thing. But this is what's going on, and it's going on at the national level. Only instead of talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, we're talking about hundreds of billions, which add up to trillions of dollars.
Yeah. Going back to your sports analogy, I mean, you know, in effect, the taxpayers are paying these high salaries for all these sports figures. Now, I love sports just as much as the next guy, but you know, by allowing
our tax money to be used for their venue where they sell beer and take the profits.
Yeah.
Okay. And they sell tickets and take the profits.
They sell television rights
and take the profits.
That's right.
You know, we don't get squat. Oh, we get a basketball team. Well, they can take it and ram it. All right. We did fine without it before. If they can learn how to win and pay for it, that's fine. You know, yeah. These soccer guys, they are showing us the way. I mean, it's just so embarrassing when you get right down to it. You know, it's you almost want to become a soccer fan.
I know.
Almost, I say.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, the high salaries, you know, that the players are getting. Now, you know, I keep going back to the word play. You know, they play football. They play this. They don't, you know, of course, it's hard work. They work at what they do to prepare themselves for it. But they play a game. And they would play that game, Chris,
regardless,
for $10 million, and they will play that same game, that same player, for $500,000. They would just play because they love the sport. You can't play at that level unless you love it so much. It's everything that you want to do. It's not about the money, but it becomes about the money because we let it.
Right. Yeah, indeed. Indeed, we do. But, you know, Ted Cruz gave a speech today, I believe it was at the Heritage Foundation, where he talked a lot about corporate cronyism. Mm-hmm. And the pages of the Wall Street Journal and others are likening him to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. But in essence, they are talking a little bit about the same thing, because we are talking about corporations basically getting corporate welfare. Now, the solutions are much different. For instance, Bernie Sanders' solution is to jack up the corporate income tax rate.
Right. Wrong way,
because that penalizes the small people that he says he's defending.
That's picking winners and losers again.
Exactly. No, you need to jack it down. You need to go the other way.
Everybody be on the same level playing field.
Exactly. So Ted Cruz is going to take some headaches from this. He's going to get beat up because he was against the trade deal. But as far as I'm concerned, that trade deal was a litmus test. And only he and Mike Huckabee of the GOP candidates that I'm aware of passed it. Marco Rubio, by the way, he voted to give the president the fast-track trade authority. And I am very disappointed about that in Marco Rubio. By the way, it would have only taken one vote to go the other way. One vote to go the other way to defeat this thing. Do you trust the president? Do you trust this president with our future? Look what he's done with Obamacare. This will be as bad as Obamacare, if not worse, because there won't be any repeal in this. Okay? If this does go through, if the treaty does go through, this will be an international treaty that we will be stuck with, all right? And there won't be any Supreme Court action that can do a damn thing about it. All right. Okay. Anyway, we'll go ahead and take the break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Iran nuke deal and how this plays into the corporate cronyism argument, debate, talk, lecture, whatever you want to call it. Tirade.
Goes back to the money, always.
Follow the money and follow the American adversaries. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the American Adversaries, folks, where we're airing out the dirty laundry of those crony capitalists. All right, welcome back. AM 660, The Answer is the station. American Adversaries is the name of the show. 407-774-8255 is the phone number if you'd like to be in on the show, be in on the discussion here. And, of course, we're not talking about crony capitalism. We're talking about corporate cronyism, which is basically an anathema to capitalism. It's not healthy for capitalism. Sometimes it can be more unhealthy than other times. For instance, the Iran nuclear deal The AP, the Associated Press, has got their hands on a document, formerly confidential paper, that says that the United States and its allies are willing to offer Iran, quote-unquote, state-of-the-art nuclear equipment if Tehran agrees to pare down its atomic weapons program as part of a final nuclear agreement, a draft document this document has revealed. We're trying to get them to pare back their nuclear program, so we're going to give them advanced nuclear technology. Now, let me just say this, that what they're talking about is we would give them light, we would basically build them light, light water nuclear reactors. We would build for them, supply them, quote unquote, supply them with light water nuclear reactors instead of, and to replace their heavy water facility at Iraq.
So it's like a diet nuclear reactor?
Yeah, basically it's nuclear reactor light. In other words, heavy water reactors produce a lot of plutonium as a byproduct of it.
Gotcha.
And the plutonium can be used to make a stronger nuclear weapon. You can make a nuclear weapon with uranium, but plutonium makes a bigger bang for your buck, so to speak. And so they want to let them have nuclear weapons, just a little bit smaller.
How about the nuclear waste?
Well,
produced from these.
Well, it's
plants.
The same thing, but also by giving them these reactors, we will be giving them, as they say, state of the art nuclear technology, which could be put to other uses, like say on a ship or a submarine.
And you know, in 20 years from now, they would never use that against us.
No, and by the way, this is on their promise not to use this technology for that sort of thing.
Right.
No, yeah, we will get a promise. Now, I'm here to tell you, and I don't know who, but somebody like GE or Siemens.
Yep.
Or somebody that produces light water nuclear reactors right there whispering in old Barack's ear, yeah, we'll get a promise from them. We'll make sure. We'll have technicians on the ground. We'll make sure nothing goes wrong. Yeah, right. No, they want to sell a few billion dollars worth of nuclear technology because we won't be giving it to them. We'll be, of course, selling
it
to them, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, what we're going to do is lift the sanctions. So not only this type of technology, but other advanced communications and financial transaction type technology, those things, computer technology.
And there's no other countries in the region that we would have to be worried about or anything like that.
No, we wouldn't have to do that.
Just making sure.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Michael, thank you for calling. Appreciate you being out there.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Back to these politicians. J.C. Watts, the former congressman and quarterback from Oklahoma, put it real well after he got out of Congress. He said, look, the vast majority of these guys and gals up there, this is the best job they ever had.
Oh, yeah.
And their attention goes from the helping the public and doing what's right to keeping their job. Remember, they even had a checking account up there where they could write checks and not make deposits.
Yeah, they're instead of helping the public, they're helping themselves out. That's for sure.
Well,
I was going to say, which is why it's rare when we have somebody like Dan Webster who is unlike that. He is not like that, and I dare say, Alan Grayson is not so much like that. Now, he's got a profession. He can take it or leave it. I think he likes the power, obviously, but I don't think he looks at it as a career option like many of them do, which I think is what you're saying.
That is correct. But also, you got a guy like John Boehner. When you vote for your constituents or your conscience, he takes away your position.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's up there. This is what's called party politics. This is the old traditional way of doing politics.
And there's nothing about a political party in the Constitution.
No, and George Washington, as a matter of fact, warned us about this. He warned us that the parties would develop their own loyalties. The representatives would be more loyal to the party than to the nation.
Sort of like the Bloods and the Crips, right?
Something like that. But, yeah, we're seeing it play out right before our very eyes. And
thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Michael. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you being out there so much. By the way, I just got this from Kathy Santomassino, and she helps us out behind the scenes. She says Bobby Jindal just declared he is running for president.
Yes.
So another high-quality candidate has gotten in the race. And Bobby is, of course, kind of gotten a bum rap because of the weak performance he gave after one of the president's State of the Union addresses. But he's a no-nonsense guy, and he's doing some great things there in Louisiana, especially when it comes to educational choice.
Well, and also their budget. I mean, we talked about Florida's budget increasing every year.
Yep.
In spite of tax cuts. Now, in Louisiana, their budget has decreased every year since he's been in office.
Man, that's the kind of guy we need. And so, once again, Bobby Jindal has just declared he is running for president. He's made it official. Who will be next? Will it be Chris Christie, maybe? Or John Kasich from Ohio? We shall see. We shall see. But you'll hear it here probably first, if not first, real close to it. On the American Adversaries. Okay, we're coming up against a hard break, but don't forget, we will be here live until 7 o'clock tonight over the airwaves because the Rays played this afternoon, unfortunately lost a 1-0 game. And also tomorrow they're off, so we'll be a full 2 hours on the airwaves tomorrow night as well. But this nuclear deal, which is coming closer and closer to fruition, is getting worse and worse. Of course, the Iranians have made it official. They're not going to allow any inspectors on any military installations. Which, you know, we know they would never do anything on a military installation.
No, we don't want to look there anyway.
No, they would never develop weapons on a military installation, would they? No, you wouldn't do that.
Who built those military installations?
Well, actually, some of them we did.
Yeah, that's what
back when the Shah was running the show over there. The trade deal is also now that nuclear deal is not a done deal. The trade deal, in terms of giving the president the authority to fast track this thing, which basically means he and his administration will now be negotiating this deal. And another one of the reasons why we had to do this was because for 10 years we weren't taking the lead in these negotiations. Well. Why didn't we just make it 11 or 12, okay, while we're at it,
right.
You know, and then we can have perhaps somebody. By the way, this fast-track authority lasts for 6 years, and so that means the next president will have it too. Should that next president be Hillary Clinton, do you want her having fast-track trade authority?
What's the rush?
Exactly.
Is the question.
What's the rush? That's right.
Why don't they make it a slow track?
Exactly.
I mean, why a fast track? I mean, I don't get it.
Yep. Well, that's where we're going to get it. Only we're going to get it where we don't want to get it.
That's why it's a fast track.
And there won't be no lubrication, neither. All right, so stick around. When we come back, we got a whole another hour to go. We got a lot more to talk about. And I want to talk about the walking, talking proof that the United States has come light years from the country that the president and Hillary Clinton would have us believe exists today. Stick around. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, sit and pray up. Let's go see the elephant. Well, I'm a roll on a honey. I'm a roll on a honey. And you try and keep
me. Right, I just want to scream like that when I hear these things like the president's going to get his fast-track trade authority. One of the major pieces of legislation that he wanted to accomplish in his second term. Oh, well, thank you very much for Republicans for giving it to him, you bunch of lunatics. All right, but you folks aren't loonies. You got the smarts going because you are listening to the American Adversaries as we come to you live this evening on AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is our number. number as we come to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And please don't forget, for the very best in Mercury Free dental care, general dentistry, and health center dentistry, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. I am Christopher Hart, joined in my studio today by one of my big sponsors, and that's David Levitt. David, thanks for being with us.
Love being here. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, David Levitt is the owner of Refresh Computers. Mm-hmm. You can go to refreshcomputers.net if you like, or you can go over to their superstore in Longwood, especially on Tuesdays where they have free tune-up Tuesdays. And, of course, that store is located right on 434 between 1792 and Ronald Reagan Boulevard. You can't miss it. And, of course, they also have a store at Alafaya and University. That's the southwest corner out there, and one in the Villages as well. And if you go to their website, refreshcomputers.net, don't forget to check out Technology Surplus Depot, or just go to technologysurplusdepot.com, where you auction off all kinds of stuff.
Kinds of good stuff.
Auctioned off any fire trucks lately?
We actually had a couple out there that ended. One sold to a company in Chile, I think, that needed, I guess, a fire truck.
I thought I was kidding when I said that.
No. No, we had three. Yeah, just recently.
Is that right? Wow. Yeah. Wow. But you also have smaller items, I take it, too, right?
Everything. I mean, everything
jewelry,
under the sun.
Jewelry and all kinds of stuff.
It's funny. I had a visit from our FedEx rep. Kudos to FedEx. They do a great job with their packages.
Okay.
But, so we ship out, 40, 50, 60 boxes a day of stuff. And it's
you mean
always,
from the auction?
From auctions, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And so,
wow.
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong business.
We never know what we're going to ship because we never know what we're getting in and auction and sell and
right.
It ships out. And she's always amazed. Like today she came in and did an account review with us. And she was like, she says, it's other companies that I deal with, they ship the same thing 100 times. So,
right.
We deal with, maybe couple size boxes, but you guys, you're all over the place,
it's like always a challenge. All right, well, that's great. Anyway, refreshcomputers.net. Don't forget, every Tuesday is free tune-up Tuesday at the Longwood Superstore over there, so check them on out. And don't forget to check out David's website. He's running for the Florida House District 29, and his website for that is dave4house.com. And
the number four,
dave4house.com. And by the way, there's a phone number there if you want to reach David. He'd love to come out and speak before your groups and make his case, make his position. Would you debate anybody? I know it's early, but
I would debate anybody. Sure.
All right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, that phone number is important because if you might have an issue going on that you haven't been able to get taken care of, which is a common complaint I'm hearing in my district.
Is that right?
And so, give me a call. As a candidate, I'm finding that I have a little bit of clout as I'm, investigating issues across the, with the state at the
right.
state level
yeah.
of things going on or not getting done that should be getting done. And we're getting some answers.
Let me tell you something, folks. Scott Plakin is sitting in that seat right now, and I'm sure there's going to be a Democrat who will run against you two guys.
Possibly.
I'm pretty sure there will be. But this is nothing for. I like Scott Plakin. He's been on the show, and I tell you what, he's head and shoulders above most of the people who are up there.
Scott's a nice guy. I'll be the first one to say he's a nice guy. Nice guys don't always. I'm a nice guy too.
Yeah.
I'm a nice guy that gets things done.
Well, I was going to say this. David is a bird of a different feather, so to speak. This guy, he knows his way around a computer. He knows how to do research. He knows how to get results. And so it's going to be a fight. It's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, by the way, folks, if you weren't listening during the first hour of the show, we talked a lot about corporate cronyism and how our government takes our tax dollars and in the name of bringing jobs into the local area or to the state, they give our money to corporations who more often than not, we don't ever, we never see the real benefits that we were promised.
That's right.
But our tax dollars are gone.
Some of these businesses just go out of business before we get to see any benefit.
Right. Right. And really, when you get down to it, and this is the direction we were going as we went out of the hour, is that businesses don't need these incentives. They have gotten it's like an addiction. We have gotten our corporations addicted to government handouts.
We have.
And we need to wean them off. We need to go cold turkey.
Absolutely.
And wean them off of this addiction to money, because they will go, they're going to do business. You know, business people are going to do business, and they'll go where they want to do business. And if they're not being addicted to these sugar highs, you know, with these tax handouts and stuff, they'll go to the best business environment. That's what government should be more in tuned to create, is a good business environment.
Absolutely. Great infrastructure, good roads.
And low taxes.
Low taxes.
Because we've talked about this on the show before. Connecticut is experiencing this right now. People are, and businesses are leaving Connecticut, you know, by the busloads, so to speak, because of the high tax rates in Connecticut. And this is happening in other states around the country, too. CNBC did a special on this the other morning, where states who have high tax rates, who have union work laws, are losing their businesses.
They are.
And they're losing their residents. Exactly. The residents who can leave. You see, this is the problem, is that the people who get hurt the most are the ones who can't leave. They're stuck. Right. They're stuck with falling real estate prices, nobody to buy their houses, no job, and high taxes to pay.
Well, I have to say, you know, in Florida, we pretty much have a climate that attracts business. And not just a commercial climate, but, you know, a weather climate.
Well,
I mean, this is Florida. Well, I mean, people want to move here, obviously. And it's not like we're North Dakota or South Dakota.
Nick, so didn't Walt Disney, one reason why he came here was because of the climate? Yes.
That's right.
And other businesses are the same way.
And so they'll move here anyway. We don't need to be putting money in their hands, you know, as they got their hand put out. And,
right.
And existing companies we have an issue with, too, because, you know, a company, if you're smart right now and you run a business and you're going to hire five people, you know that you go to your county commission or your city commission if you're in a city and put your hand out.
Yep.
And because you're going to get a handout.
Yep.
And that's just got to stop, because guess what? You're going to hire those five people anyway because you need them.
Yep.
So we just got to stop this. It's ridiculous, and it's really got me upset.
And corporations, by the way, spend a lot of money on staff and things in order to get these perks. You know, the lobbyists and all of the legal staff and all that comes along with this nonsense.
Some big companies have entire departments whose job it is to go out and seek the government handouts.
Yeah, that's right.
And they do it.
And they do it.
Because we give it to them.
Sure enough, we do. And by the way, the trade deal in Washington, D.C., if you didn't hear the first hour of the show, the trade deal, the trade fast track of trade authority it's a done deal now. The Senate is putting the finishing touches on it as we speak. They'll be passing a couple of things into the evening. The trade adjustment authority, which is going to appropriate a bunch of money to give to people who are going to lose their jobs, even though we're being told this is going to create jobs. There will be, quote unquote, disruptions as you lose a, say, $70,000, $80,000, or $90,000 a year job so that you can get a $20,000 or $30,000 a year job. That's what they mean by disruptions.
And that's been happening way too much in the last decade or more.
Exactly. And these free trade deals have basically been poison for the middle class here in the United States, because many of those jobs were jobs that put people in the middle class, factory jobs, manufacturing jobs, service jobs, and the businesses that went along with those jobs. I mean, when factories close down, guess what? The barber shop down the street closes down. The restaurant down the street closes down. The gas station closes down. The liquor store probably stays in business.
Yeah.
That's what we get.
Yeah.
Right? And to give this president in particular this authority, I hope that the Republicans are somehow up to some ingenious political move here, that they're going to, at the last minute, you know, hand this president a huge defeat. But I tell you what, I'm not holding my breath, not one minute. Okay, speaking of 1 minute, we got about that left in this segment, so we'll take the break. When we come back, I see we have Scott. That'd be, Scott Miller of My Liberty Threads is on the line with us. So we'll find out where he is and what is his take on this. By the way, Ted Cruz did vote against this fast-track trade authority. Marco Rubio voted for it. To me, that's a litmus test. Litmus test. By the way, Mike Huckabee was the other Republican candidate who was vocally against it. I think Trump was, too, although sometimes I can't make sense out of what he's...
He was.
But anyway, by the way, he's running strong in the polls in New Hampshire.
Number two.
Yeah, that's right. All right, we're number one, though, so stick around. We'll be right back. Back to the show, folks. Of course, that's Three Dog Night. You know, that was the first concert I ever saw. It was a Three Dog Night concert. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a great song, too.
Yeah, it is a great song. And, you know, when you think about it, that's Barack Obama. A child is black. A child is white. Yeah. He had a black father, a white mother.
Mm-hmm.
Tells you something about where we've come, folks. I'll get more into that here a little bit later. But I want to go to Scott of My Liberty Threads. He's been holding on the line. Scott, thanks for calling.
Thanks. How's it going?
Excellent. Where are you at tonight?
I am in western Pennsylvania, about 45 miles outside of Pittsburgh.
What's going on up there?
Well, we just came off of the Blue Angels air show out in Latrobe, well, actually is in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, this past weekend. It was a phenomenal display of patriotism. They spent so much time honoring the troops, and they had several of the old warbirds out there warming up for the Blue Angels, and gosh, it was just veterans left and right. So, you know, it was just a phenomenal weekend. It's really cool to be a part of.
A lot of people out there?
Yeah, you know, it was so disappointing. The weather report was much worse than the weather actually was. But with an event like that, so many people that would have come from around the region really didn't come. And just about everybody I talked to was just from the area around here. So last year they had 150,000 people there. This year the newspaper was reporting about 70,000.
I see.
But it was still a great weekend. I'm having a fantastic time in Pennsylvania. The people up here just are totally charged up about, you know, trying to get this mess fixed.
So, go ahead.
I'm proud to report that the number one seller in four different venues in Pennsylvania over the last week has been, "I love my country, it's the government that scares me."
That's a good one.
They had to send me more of those on the road for this weekend's Rib Festival because I've completely sold out of them.
Hey, by the way, speaking of shirts, everybody loves our new T-shirts with the logo on it. You guys did a great job.
Oh, great.
And, they came out fantastic.
Well, you know, it's the printing actually gets done by our printer called Amazing Tees, who, does fantastic work. If anybody ever needs something done, contact me, and I will definitely get you the best quality American-made T-shirts, you know, at the best price you'll find anywhere around. So thanks for the mention of that, Chris. I appreciate that.
I know somebody running for office that might be calling you.
Yeah, Scott. David Levitt here in the studio. He's going to need some campaign T-shirts, you know.
I'll tell you. I've seen it happen, but not often enough. When someone running for office will do them on American-made T-shirts, it makes all the difference in the world.
These are American-made and American proud. Hey, Scott, let me ask you. Now, David Levitt's a libertarian. He's running for state house here in Florida. What do you hear from people around the country, their feelings toward the Libertarian Party? Are people looking at more and more favorably at it?
They are. And, I can give you the short term and the long term on that. It depends. On the short term, it depends where you're at. There are pockets. There's Virginia. There's North Carolina. There's certainly Texas, Oklahoma, where people have got a much stronger opinion of libertarians. And it's the image that needs to be worked on. It's not necessarily the fault of the libertarians, but in those states that I haven't mentioned just then, what I'm finding is, you know, I'll talk to a guy at the booth, and everything we're talking about for 5 points, maybe 7 or 8 points that we're talking about, whether it's gun rights or government getting out of our lives, and so many different things is right in step with things. And then if I mention the word libertarian, or no, actually what I heard one time with this one guy was his son said, but Dad, what do you think about the libertarians? Is it all they want to do is get together and smoke weed? You know, and he went, you know, they were walking off at that point.
Right.
It wasn't even something we got to talk about. But that's such the image, and it isn't just with the weed. It's always with just one point where I'm hearing people say it. For instance, there'll be the foreign policy, and they will completely dismiss libertarians because they've heard libertarians say we shouldn't be involved in anywhere. Mm. Where, in truth, when you speak with libertarians and liberty-minded people, they aren't all lockstep in agreement about any one thing necessarily.
Absolutely, Scott, you're dead on with that.
Yeah.
With that assessment.
And yeah.
So what it comes down to is the politician or the person who's running for office, for their view on each one of these subjects and their ability to articulate it so that they can try to get enough of a following and enough people behind what they're about. And if we could just get some momentum rolling with either libertarian candidates getting into office and winning races or getting into the conservative party and making them truly conservative and could point out those successes, there might be the opportunity for more and more voices like that to be heard.
I agree. And I think that's why it's also very important for libertarians to run in local office, which at our state convention that we had just a few weeks ago, that was a big topic of discussion.
Yeah, right.
You know, is, you know, we need to run for city councils, county commission,
school boards.
You know, these local elections are so much more important to the libertarian movement than anything else right now.
You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you something else that I'm finding equally important. And so this is so timely. But right before I left Florida, I did it was called Freedom Fest. And it was a festival put on. It was the week after the convention you just mentioned.
Yep, in Tampa.
It was over in Bradenton. Yep, in Bradenton. Mm-hmm. And they had a pretty good turnout. But what was really interesting about this was it wasn't billed as a libertarian function. It was called Freedom Fest.
Right.
And I heard about it because I'm on different mailing lists. You know, the email blasts, and when I looked into it, it looked like they were kind of trying to make it more like a festival. And when you got there, it was a festival, and there was rides, and there were people that were selling pretzels, and it wasn't just your typical pack booths at a political function inside somewhere. This was outside in a park that had about two great rock and roll bands playing and a country band that played. And you know, there wasn't a big enough turnout because it was, you know, the beginning of June, which you don't really do that in Florida. But I think that was a great way because all the people that were there, even if they were there for the music or for the food, they got to hear the message from the different speakers that spoke in between the musicians that were on stage.
Oh,
and I think that's another opportunity to really get the message out that this is about liberty. It's not about any one thing or one person. This is about getting liberty back in the hands of the people.
Yeah, and the reason we have libertarian candidates is because it's a political party, and part of what a political party should be doing and what we do is run candidates. You know, we try to find people that would fit, if you will, like it, the Republicans or Democrats would do, and try to get them to run for those offices.
And I think that going for the local offices is a great idea too, because people are more likely to vote for a candidate if they know them personally, and that you can do on the local level. And when you get to the national level, it's kind of a leap, you know, if you don't have any local representation in a party to think that you're going to do it on the national level. So I like to see that change in the strategy there. So real quick, Scott, where are you headed next?
Well, this next week we've got a rib festival in right here in the same area in western Pennsylvania. But what I'm really excited to announce is I got into the largest county fair in Iowa, which is going to be early fall. And I'm going to have some great reports right from one of the key states leading into the whole campaign. So I'm really excited to get out there. There should be at least 300,000 people over a five-day period there.
Wow.
And I'm really going to get to gauge how they're doing in Iowa.
Yeah, well, congratulations. What we'll all to do, we'll set it up where we get a daily report from you, from the front lines of Iowa.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, you take care and travel safely. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys. Good talking to you.
Yes, Scott. Right. Thank you.
All right. Of course, that's Scott of My Liberty Threads. You can get those shirts at MyLibertyThreads.com. All right. And David Levitt, you can help him out by going to Dave4House. That's D-A-V-E, the number 4House.com. And there you find the phone number, and you can find all kinds of information. And David Levitt, once again, thanks for being with us tonight. You're off to a meeting.
Off to a meeting.
A government meeting?
It's a party meeting. Okay. Seminole County Libertarian Affiliate Executive Committee meeting.
All right. We'll keep up the good work.
Got to go to that.
We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back, folks.
AM 660, The Answer.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show on AM 660, The Answer. And you can give me a call at 407-774-8255. That's the number. All right, and earlier this last half hour, I had Nick play the Black and White by the Three Dog Night as we came back from the break. And as I was saying earlier, I had a conversation with one of our listeners, Rita, and she was talking about, you know, what about the president's daughters, you know, in all of this debate about racism and everything. And it made me stop and think, you know, what about the president and the president's daughters? The president is a child of a black man and a white woman, was raised by his grandparents who were white. And his daughters would not exist had he not been himself created. And none of this would have happened if we didn't live in a society that had come a long way from Jim Crow and racial segregation. Wouldn't have happened. Those daughters wouldn't exist. Those beautiful daughters of his would not exist. Perhaps even he wouldn't exist if we had not already, by that time, come a long way, and we have come further since then. Of course, that's not what he wants us to believe. That's not what Hillary Clinton wants us to believe. That's not what liberals in general want us to believe. They want us to believe that we are torn apart by racism, that we are torn apart by hatred, whites for blacks, that white people are still suppressing black people, that there is, quote-unquote, institutionalized racism and segregation in our institutions. Well, what institutions are they talking about? Are they? Let's start with the federal government. How about that institution? Is racism prevalent in the federal government? If it is, I don't know where it is. Certainly blacks are overrepresented in the federal government. In other words, there are far more of them working in the federal government in terms of a percentage there are in the population, general population. So I don't think we could say that there is institutional racism in the federal government. Well, what about the educational institutions? Is there institutional racism in the educational institutions? Show me. Show me. I'm not from Missouri, but I'll play it. Show me. Show me where. Show me where the racial institutional racism exists in educational institutions. How about health care? Where is the racial, institutional racism in the institution of health care? Can anybody name an institution where there is institutional racism? I would like to know where it is. In the military? Is it there? How about professional sports? Is it there? Well, I'm running out of institutions here. Somebody give me some more institutions, especially one where there's institutional racism. I would like to know where it exists. And I would also like to know why someone isn't asking the president and Ms. Clinton where this institutional racism exists. You know, isn't it odd that this president, who represents himself, talked about DNA, how it's in our DNA. How about his DNA? He has the DNA of white folk. White folk running through his blood or whatever. Yeah, he is a product of how very far we have come. And yet he has the audacity to tell us that we ain't come nearly far enough. Well, we might have a ways to go yet, but there'll always be a ways to go. That's the way life is. Life is not perfect, never was, never will be. Except that it's perfect in its imperfection. That perhaps is a topic for another day. But we have come a long way. We need to recognize that if we're to go further. We can't go backwards. We shouldn't be going backwards anyway. But that's certainly where the liberals want us to go. They want us to go backwards so that we can all be victims, so that they can save the day for us. But when you think about it, the president himself, the very president himself, is proof of how little racism exists in the United States compared to what it used to be. How very little racism exists compared to other countries in the world. How very little racism exists that allows his beautiful daughters to live any kind of life they want to live. The president himself is walking, talking proof of how great this country is. How good many, the vast majority of white people are. The president himself is walking, talking proof of how far we have come. And yet he would have us believe otherwise. Why? Well, obviously for political gain. And that is the cheapest, the most perverse, if you will, motivation of all. Because it guarantees that a lot of people are going to be hurt, both physically and emotionally, so that he can get some political points, so that Ms. Clinton can get her sorry butt elected. We will suffer. What a great thing these liberals bring us, isn't it? Mm-mm. No, it ain't. At the end of the day, the president himself is walking, talking proof. By the way, if you're black and you go to San Francisco, you're going to get the San Francisco treat. You remember the old ding, ding, rice-a-roni, San Francisco treat? Well, if you're black and you go to San Francisco, you're going to get the San Francisco treat mint. Now, this is Ms. Nancy Pelosi's digs, right? This city has been run, this is another one of them cities that's been run by liberals for a long time. Only this is a fairly wealthy, well-to-do liberal city, but nonetheless, still run by liberals. But if you go to San Francisco and you are black, you are far more likely to be arrested than if you are a white or Hispanic. Now, how can that be? How can that be? Why, San Francisco, they're the epitome of liberalism. How can it be that if you are a black man or woman, you have a far greater chance of being arrested in San Francisco than a white person? These are the people that are going to save you. These are the people who are going to come to your rescue, whoever you are. If you continue to put your faith in those fools, you will continue to be disappointed. You will continue to cry and shed tears. You will continue to bury your children because they are leading you astray. And they are leading you astray for the cheapest, most despicable reasons, simply because so that they can have power to wield over you. What great folk they are, huh? Yeah, the president, I guess, you know, he doesn't understand that in the years prior to the civil rights movement, that the likelihood of him having a white mother and a black father would have been far less. the likelihood that he would have been raised by white grandparents? Far less. The likelihood that he would have gone on to college and had all the things that he has had in his life, including the presidency, wouldn't have happened. No, we've come a long way. We have come a long way, and we need to recognize it. We need to recognize it, because if we don't, we begin to slide back, which, of course, is where the president wants us to go, because it scores him some political points. In the meantime, his constituencies suffer, but they don't seem to mind suffering so much. So I guess, yeah, maybe we can just go ahead and allow them to suffer. But no, we can't, because it's not the right thing to do. But we were shown the right thing to do. We were shown the right thing to do last Friday and over the weekend in Charleston. And, of course, the media doesn't want to pay one lick of attention to that, not at all. Because it belies their narrative. It belies what Ms. Clinton and Mr. Obama are going around saying. And, of course, that's what they want us to believe, too. Well, why? Well, because, of course, they're liberals, too, and because it sells newspapers. In their opinion, a miracle of people forgiving one another, that's not newsworthy. Nobody will buy that. Who would pay for that? Only people who are longing for it by the millions. Today, Bobby Jindal announced he's running for president. You think that would have happened, say, 30 years ago, Mr. President? Do you think? Do you think that we would have a black Republican senator from South Carolina 30 years ago, Mr. President? Do you think? Do you think we would have a woman of Indian descent as the governor of South Carolina 30 years ago, Mr. President? Do you think? Do you think Fritz Hollings would have allowed something like that? The Democrat who put that battle flag where it is? Do you think that he would have supported a black Republican senator? Do you think he would have supported you, Mr. President? Fat chance of that, my friend. Fat chance of that, my friend. No, we've come a long way. And part of the sticking point, or the sticking where it's keeping us stuck, let me just put it this way, is all in your mind. It's all in your attitude. All right, I'll go ahead and go to the break. When I come back, I got a caller on the line. If you folks would like to chime in, 407-774-8255 is the number. And if I get a chance, we'll wrap it up tonight talking about how consumers are not as dumb. All right, welcome back to the show, folks, where you got the pearl of talk show decadence. Christopher Hart here, the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show. And don't forget, we'll be here tomorrow night. And I'm going to have B. Brian Blair on the show with me tomorrow night. Of course, he's a professional wrestler, wrestled in the WWE. We'll talk to him a little bit about the Dusty Rhodes situation. You know, Dusty Rhodes passed away. He went to the funeral. I also want to talk to him about some, you know, national politics as it's playing out here in the state of Florida. He's got a pretty good feel of things. And, of course, he was a county commissioner over there on the West Coast. All right, but right now I want to go to the phone line. Al has been waiting. Thanks, Al, for calling. I appreciate you being out there.
Hey, God bless, brother. I almost didn't want to call in. I was just wanted you to keep going there for a little while longer, you know?
Well, so, thanks. I appreciate it, Al. Thank you.
No doubt, brother. I wanted to follow along the lines of follow the money, right? So you got this whole situation in South Carolina, and, you know, I think that something is going on. I mean, you already know Rahm Emanuel saying things like you can't let a good crisis go to waste, or or even Tim Holder, what, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, saying that you have to brainwash, you know, the people into believing in gun control. So like you say, I mean, he's going to get and shoot someone regardless. If that's what he wants to do, he's going to get it regardless whether it's legal or not. and following the money, like I said, I just think it's really weird. A normal funeral usually costs $6,000-$7,000, and I feel for people, you know, that lose a family member and all of that. You have the Carolina Panthers donating $100,000 to the victims. Okay, cool, fine, whatever. You know, it's good, good support. Then you have Boeing giving $100,000 to the victims. Okay, fine, no problem with that at all. Now, when the government comes in and they give $29 million to the families and victims, then I'm starting to wonder, well, what's really going on here? Do you get what I'm saying, Chris?
Yeah, I do. It's a form of reparations, if you will, and it's based on guilt.
Another thing I'd like to say is that these families, okay, normal families, right, do not go and do TV rounds the next day after their family members get killed. Normal families shed tears on TV when they're on TV. Normal families, every time you would say the name, it should bring up tears to your eyes. You get what I'm saying? So
I absolutely
people aren't
do.
Acting normal, and I feel like they're almost getting paid off.
Well, that's troubling to me because I would not feel, personally speaking, would not feel comfortable with that situation. In other words, I wouldn't feel comfortable getting a bunch of money because my family member had been murdered in a church or something like that.
There's people die every day.
Exactly. I would not feel comfortable. That's just me. It's me and you. But I would not feel comfortable in that situation. I would feel like it is sort of selling out my loved one, if you will, for a set amount of money.
Right.
This is not an accident where you're getting a settlement or suing or something like that. This is different from that. This is the government paying reparations, and it just reinforces the misperceptions that there is this institutionalized racism, because as you say, this is happening every day. Why aren't we paying the families of the dozens of victims who are killed in our cities every weekend?
Right.
Because of drug violence.
Why? Chicago.
Exactly. They're, in my mind, they're just as deserving of it. They're just as deserving of it.
And if those are the parameters, somebody just getting killed violently, if those are the parameters of getting the money, then sure.
Yeah, yeah. But,
personally, I wouldn't want any of my tax dollars going to anybody's family for any reason, unless it was something. They use our money and do whatever they want with it already.
Yeah.
It seems as if the country we're really slipping away, the people are feel almost helpless. You know, it doesn't matter who we vote in. It doesn't matter. They always end up going for themselves.
Yeah. It is
at the end of the day.
It is frustrating. It is frustrating.
You know, they go in with salaries like ours and come out as millionaires.
Go figure.
They're supposed to be a public figure, you know?
Yeah, go figure. Go figure. But, yeah, I don't like the precedent of giving that money out either. To me, it's too much like reparations. But anyway, yeah. Al, thank you very much for being out there. I so much appreciate it.
Hey, God bless you, brother. And, hey, man, we all miss Lair. I miss those great introductions in the beginning. And I never got to ask him if he actually wrote those himself or where did he used to come up with that stuff. So I think that.
Well, I can answer that. First of all, I do too. I echo your sentiments, but he wrote them himself. And he usually came in here with it in his hand, but sometimes he'd be sitting there and he'd put the finishing touches on it. And that's the only part of the show that we scripted is that he would write those. And he would also, he wrote his own Sunday night closing remarks. And I just wish I'd have known that guy in high school and college. I could have had him write a lot of papers for me. I'll tell you what,
exactly.
He just has a knack for it. He gets it from his mama.
That's real. Well, at the end of the day, man, we do miss him, and it's not like he's passed away or anything.
No.
Hopefully he will come back.
Yeah, that we're holding out hope, and he's out there listening. very appreciative of the sentiments.
All right, brother.
Well,
God bless, man.
Same to you, Al. Same to you. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your call. And, the situation, we understand that we want to relieve people's pain and suffering in situations like this, but I don't think piling a bunch of money on them is necessarily the way to go. I just don't. I somehow, ironically, it cheapens life to me to pile a bunch of money on somebody because one of their loved ones has been killed. That's not what they're looking for. It's not really going to ease the pain, if you will, of that loved one being gone. All right. But anyway, once again, we'll keep our eye on this. But I just before I get out of here, I just got a couple of minutes left. I saw this. This was in the Wall Street Journal today. This at least will warm your heart a little bit. A study has been done. Let me pull up the paper here. Let me get the right one out. Oh, no, I don't. You know, while we're talking about this racism thing, I want to just read a couple of paragraphs from today's Wall Street Journal by a fellow by the name of Jason Riley. He's a Manhattan Institute senior fellow and a contributor to the Wall Street Journal, and he wrote a book called Please Stop Helping Us, How Liberals Make It Harder for Blacks to Succeed. His name's Jason Riley. He's a black man, and he's writing about Charleston. He said, what Charleston tells us about race relations. I'm just going to finish up by reading the last couple paragraphs of the article here, he says. But the shooting victims deserve to be remembered as individuals, not politicized symbols of black struggle. Mr. Roof may have his sympathizers, but they are largely relegated to the anonymous fever swamps of the internet. Racism still exists, alas, and no one reading this is likely to see the day when it doesn't. But anti-black animus doesn't explain racial gaps in employment, crime, income, learning, and single-parent homes. Furthermore, attitudes and behaviors in the United States have evolved to a point where a twice-elected black president has asked the second black attorney general to investigate a shooting in a Deep South state with a black senator and Indian-American governor. The black left guards its victim status fiercely. Witness the Black Lives Matter brigades that reject replacing the slogan's adjectives with All Lives Matter, or the fury directed at Rachel Dolezal, the NAACP leader who recently resigned her position after being caught out as a white person pretending to be black. In the 1990s, Chris Rock used to tell a joke about racial hardship. And he's quoting Chris right now. He says, Chris Rock used to say, do you know how hard it is to be black in America? No, he says, do you know how hard it is to be black in America? He would ask his audience. I'll tell you how hard. There's not a single white person in the audience who would trade places with me, and I'm rich. Perhaps Ms. Dolezal is another sign of racial progress. The article talks about how in past times, we may not have ever known who Dylan Roof was because the community would have protected him. He was caught within 24 hours because people were looking for him. They wanted justice. They wanted justice for those people who were killed because they were people who were killed, not because they were black or they weren't black or they were white. It was because people were concerned about their fellow citizens, regardless of their color. We have come light years from the country that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama still seem to want to live in. We don't want to live in it. We don't live in it. And we're going to keep talking about it, but we'll have to do it tomorrow because I'm out of time tonight. So please join me again tomorrow night with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Night, everybody.
Service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.